Welcome to another edition of Perspectives from Rothschild & Co. My name is Laura Kunlin, and for today's edition, I'm once again joined by our global investment strategists, Kevin Gardiner and Victor Balfour.
Welcome to the April edition of Perspectives, Kevin and Victor. I hope you didn't overindulge on e-sex over the Easter holidays. I hear that the iconic Swissland Gold Bunny chocolate was nearly 56% more expensive this year in the UK.
Wow.
Would be a good number for performance, right?
That would. Are we overweight chocolate generally?
Before we revisit the topic of inflation and also gold later, let's dive into the latest economic news. Could you summarize for our listeners the most important developments since we last spoke 4 weeks ago at the beginning of March, Victor?
Yes. Hi, Laura. So I think the kind of headline is that there's no great change in our kind of thinking at the moment. You know, the business cycle seems to be in relatively good shape. You know, for most part, kind of growth continues alongside disinflation. In terms of the first part of that, I'd say that activity momentum, if anything, seems to have picked up a bit this year, particularly this side of the pond. We're seeing this sort of gradual stabilization in the survey data and possible signs that the manufacturing cycle, which has sort of been in a slump now for sort of 18 months or so, might be rebounding. And importantly, of course, you know, unemployment rates remain low. Of course, in the US, we saw further evidence of this in terms of very strong job gains, but a moderation in pay growth, you know, arguably the kind of best of both worlds, if you like. So for now, growth continues. I think on the inflation front, you know, headline CPIs are kind of back in the sort of 2.5% to 3.5% range across the kind of major economies. Overall, the trend remains lower, not higher, but I think it's going to be a bumpy journey. Now, I think a couple of challenges at the moment on this front. One is, of course, the revival in oil prices we've seen in recent weeks and months, obviously going to place some upward pressure on headline rates. So far, this is relatively modest, likely a temporary factor. More importantly, though, I think is the sticky services pricing, which is obviously underpinned by a revival in real wage growth. You know, this is likely to slow that descent in those core rates, those underlying rates of inflation, back to target. And it's part of the reason I think we on the strategy team have felt that inflation would stay elevated in the sort of 2% to 4% range through this year and perhaps into next.
So, Kevin, Victor talked a lot about inflation just now. Could you tell us a bit more about the latest decisions or lack thereof by the major central banks?
Yes, well, it's becoming a little bit more exciting if central banks can ever be exciting, because we did see some idiosyncratic moves. The consensus amongst central banks has broken down a little bit, but only a little bit. I'm referring, of course, to the fact that the Swiss National Bank felt able to reduce interest rates. Well, the Bank of Japan, for the first time in many years, actually started to increase rates. And in each case, there are very special circumstances which are not reflective of the wider response. Switzerland's monetary credibility is pretty high at the best of times. It's arguably been even higher than usual as inflation has come back down to almost 1%. The SNB can pretty much do what it likes with interest rates, and so it has felt able to jump the gun and to cut rates. The Bank of Japan is presiding over an economy which does its own thing very strangely, and they are a law unto themselves. The big three Western banks, so the ECB, the Fed, of course, the Bank of England, signaled pretty clearly that they're going to continue to drag their heels a little on interest rates, because although inflation is mostly well behaved, it's not coming down quite as quickly as it could do. And unemployment in particular remains remarkably low. As Victor was saying, the activity data have held up pretty well. So the ECB, the Fed and the Bank of England all signaled that they're not quite ready to reduce rates just yet. Of the three, probably the Fed sounds the most hawkish, and maybe the ECB will eventually be the first of the three to move, but we doubt that it's going to do anything this side of June.
And how did markets react then?
Well, remarkably positively, and it feels almost a little bit as if the market response is a little bit too good to last, because volatility has been remarkably low in the circumstances, and yet stocks have continued to hit new highs. And although the shorter end of bond markets has been a bit disappointed, as you would expect, because interest rate expectations of cuts in interest rates have had to be retrenched, postponed. So short-dated bonds haven't done very well, but actually longer-dated bonds have tried to regain their feet. They've regained a little bit of poise. So markets have mostly digested this higher for even longer stance from the big three central banks reasonably constructively.
Let's talk a bit about commodities then. Brent crude climbed above $90 a barrel for the first time since October 2023, as the conflict in the Middle East showed signs of escalating. What's your view on how the gold price is reacting, Victor?
Well, I think first of all, let's address oil, because I think that's quite important. You are right that this has been sort of steadily trending higher this year. It's up about a fifth in 2024. And yes, I think it does seem as though geopolitical tensions, threat and supply are probably playing a part there. Of course, not to mention OPEC's attempts in the background to curtail output. However, we also think that this might reflect stronger demand in the background. You know, if the economy is proving resilient, you know, of course, particularly if that manufacturing story is picking up, as I kind of alluded to earlier, then so too will kind of demand for kind of inputs. And we're seeing this not only in terms of oil markets, but of course, in terms of industrial metals as well. Copper and nickel, for example, are moving higher. I think as far as gold is concerned, you know, this is also moving up. It's up about a tenth this year. It recently touched an all-time high. It's over kind of $2,300 an ounce, I believe, at the moment. I think the shiny metals revival is probably more around its investment appeal, given those geopolitical threats, rather than perhaps anything more fundamental. I think its price is moving up in spite of things like strengthening dollar, the revival in real yields, two things which often gold is negatively correlated to. So for the moment, yes, gold seems to be responding somewhat to those geopolitical tensions.
And what about Bitcoin then? Gold and Bitcoin reached highs at the same time. Is that a coincidence?
The Bitcoin bulls are back at the moment. Yes, I mean, look, it's up about two-thirds this year. It also touched an all-time high, as you suggested there, was back above $70,000 in March, fallen back a little bit since. It's not clear what's behind this latest move. Is it geopolitical stress? Is it more mainstream appeal, the launch of the spot ETS, or even something more technical, this pending block split? We don't really know. I think its positive relationship with gold is entirely coincidental. You know, if you look at the relationship over longer periods, it's highly erratic. You could equally point to its positive relationship with stock prices. Certainly the notion that it's a hedge against kind of equity volatility is woefully misplaced. I think from our side, we're somewhat skeptical about what role Bitcoin plays. It doesn't seem to us to be a medium of exchange or a store of value, let alone a kind of hedge against monetary debasement. Of course, one asset class that does have all of those things and genuine scarcity, credibility, more convincing inflation hedging characteristics, of course, is gold. So that's something just to keep in mind.
So last question. And spoiler alert, there were no changes to it, but there were elaborate discussions in our last asset allocation meeting. Could you please provide our listeners with an update on the key takeaways, Kevin?
Oh, you're right, Laura. There are always, I hope, elaborate discussions at our asset allocation meeting. But this time around, we still are pretty constructive in terms of looking at capital markets. We do feel that the mix of economic resilience and disinflation can broadly continue. So in our discussions, we're looking to add to positions rather than to subtract from them, most likely to equities perhaps, but we're also more open-minded on bonds than we've been for a long time, because they're not expensive anymore and they offer decent yields. But after extensive discussion, we decided to sit tight. We felt that markets were probably just a little bit too quiet, and the consensus has been a little bit too quiescent recently. We can't quite believe that the mood will stay quite this benign for much longer. So we wouldn't be at all surprised to see a little bit more tactical volatility creeping back into the picture. And we wanted to keep our powder dry for that. So we didn't make any changes. We do still have some cash available if we do decide to add to securities, but we decided not to do that just yet. And that means that in Mosaic portfolios, we are still no more than neutral on bonds. We have a small overweight in stocks and a correspondingly small underweight in cash. But we could easily move to a double underweight in cash should the circumstances warrant it. As I say, we're not quite there yet, we think.
And it's always good to have a little bit of cash available, right?
Absolutely.
As always, many thanks to the both of you. And this time around, I didn't start with a quote, so I can actually close with one. One that combines money and chocolate, and on top of that is Japanese. Money can't buy happiness, but it can, of course, buy chocolate, which is pretty much the same thing. Thank you so much.
If you want to find out more about the topics discussed in this episode, please go on www.rothschildandco.com/insights. Thank you for listening.
Please note, this audio content is produced by Rothschild & Co. for information purposes only, and any reliance on the information provided in it is done at your own risk. This content should only be used or reproduced with the express written permission of Rothschild & Co. The podcast is not provided as a solicitation, recommendation, or invitation to buy or sell any security, fund, or any other banking or investment product. Nothing in this podcast constitutes advice of any sort, and no responsibility is accepted in relation to the fairness or accuracy of it. The value of investments and the income from them can go down as well as up, and you may not recover the amount of your original investment. Past performance should not be taken as a guide to future performance.